You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Welcome to Fix It and Flip It. The current real estate market is ripe for rehabbing. If you want to learn how to buy the right property at the right price and learn how to project and control costs, then you've come to the right place. Our host, Tony Raffin, is from the number one rematch team in southeastern Michigan. And Kevin McClellan is Mr. Flipper Extraordinaire. Now, let's welcome Tony and Kevin. This is Fix It and Flip It.
Did we do a mic check? Can everybody hear me?
Test one, two.
Okay. We're a disaster today. Nothing seems to be working right.
Oh, this has been a week from hell.
I know. A week from hell? It was your birthday, though. Happy birthday, Tony.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, happy birthday.
Forgot. 43. You never look so good, man.
43. No, I'm 75. Today's reverse day.
Oh, okay. You look great.
57 years young.
You look great for 75, I tell you.
You got more energy than most 15-year-olds.
You know what? I wonder about that sometimes.
I've always said I'm jealous of his energy, man. I take half of it.
Yeah, but boy, when I go out, I just fall. I'm done. Boom. It's like there's like full blast or off.
What'd you do for the birthday? Anything good?
We went to dinner at the London Chop House down in Detroit. They reopened and they did a beautiful job. Had a badass 35-day-old ribeye. It was so good. Yeah. We had a few shots. We had a little fun, a couple friends. It was a really good time. We had a great time.
Good. Tomahawk ribeye or the regular?
No, we didn't get the tomahawk this time. I wish I would have because the tomahawk is, you know, tomahawk's my favorite, man. It's the best.
Why don't you introduce our guest who we got here?
We're sitting here talking to we have to be careful how we say this.
Okay.
Go ahead. I want you to introduce yourself, Al Block. Everybody, this is Al Block.
I am associate broker, now co-owner of RE/MAX First. I have been a realtor for 29 years. I am president-elect of the Greater Metropolitan Association of Realtors, but disclaimer, asterisk, I am not the spokesperson or official spokesperson to speak on behalf of the Association of Realtors.
Good. Now we got that bullshit out of the way. We can move forward.
Yeah, thank you. It all feels better now. Okay. CYA. Mm-hmm. Got the liability out
of
the way.
Cover your ass, baby. Cover your ass.
Al does everything, though, right? I mean, this guy sells a ton. Probably does a ton of business.
I remember when I got in the business as real estate, I used to drive down Hall Road, and there was a moving truck. And it said, buy from me, get this truck to move with. Turn your phone on silent. We're in a damn podcast. Or is that yours?
Mine.
What the hell, you guys?
That's mine.
So, is that again?
Yeah, I got a Facebook message.
Okay, though you can watch it. I mean, you guys look at me like I'm some kind of ADHD freak. And Al Block, I always wanted to be like Al Block. Huh. And Al is a rock star in this industry. He is, I mean, you are, Al. I mean, end of story. You know what you're doing. You know what you're talking about. You advocate for realtors. You volunteer a ton of your time. And you pay attention to detail more so than anybody I know. You know, you don't do anything wrong. Don't get me wrong. I know you do things wrong, but you're such an advocate on doing things right the first way that, you know. So the reason we had you on today.
Yeah, never ask me what time it is. I'll try to tell you how to build a watch.
Yeah, don't ask me for a glass of water because I got a fire hose out there too. Yeah. The reason we asked you on today was to talk about how a realtor could help an investor or an investor help a realtor.
Okay.
And we can touch on some of the appraisal issues that come to play because Al's
an appraiser, so that'd be a great idea to talk about.
I carry the license. I don't do many appraisals because I don't find it financially rewarding. You got to really do that full time to do that well. However, I have the skill set, which I think that helps me bring to my clients. So I think like an appraiser. So when we sell that property, buy that property, I'm going into it with that mindset.
So when then my appraisal comes in low and you're my listing agent, I can come and beat your ass because you think like an appraiser.
You know, here's the problem. Appraising is not a science. We think it is.
There's
protocols, but it's human opinion. And you get five appraisers, you're going to get five human opinions. Three or four should be really close to each other, but then you always have that anomaly.
Right.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, most of the time, you're not going to get four or five on the same property. One, maybe two.
Maybe two.
I just dealt with it on two of my properties that were renovated on the market. One of them came back in $17,000 light on the appraisal. One came back $7,000, 3 days apart. So I had a great week.
Well, you know, while we're on that.
Cost you $24,000
out of my pocket. I mean, I could have paid for my nephew's tuition when he grows up.
Well, let me explain appraising. This is something. Okay, let's get into this. The issue with appraising is what a lot of people don't realize. It is vastly different after the recession. The U.S. government, basically through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, changed how appraising is done. The lenders do not contact the appraisers directly. They have to go through an appraisal management company, and then those get assigned to appraisers. So if you think of it this way, imagine you're going to your doc. You've been going to the same family doctor for 20 years, and then one day, they say, well, you can't go to your family doctor. You got to contact the doctor referral service. And when you now want a doctor, you're going to get the doctor the referral service sends you to. You might get the one you had, but the one you had or the one you get, they're also getting paid less because the referral service is getting a piece.
Sounds like Obamacare.
No comment. However, however,
I think they all say it out of politics. I guess we won't get into politics.
Listen, we get into politics. We get into everything.
That's
over
something
here.
You can do. Right. I choose not to.
I bring Jessica into it.
But you know, to be truthful, the last administration was stuck with that problem of the recession, and they made that choice. I think there's too much overreach in that area. And so now you have all these appraisers who you want to get the best appraisal service. You want them to do their best job. They can't do anything special in the sense that they don't care. They're getting paid less. And also if it's a decision to, can I do more work, do a better job? Well, if you're getting paid less and you, really aren't beholden to anyone, there's no one to give you a pat on the back. And I don't say pat on the back in the way of doing a favor for the lender, but there are times that an appraiser can do more diligence and then there's times they don't care. And let me tell you, I think they care less now.
Well,
because they lost their business.
But isn't it true that when an appraisal management company, who I call the pimp, the appraisal management company puts a deal on the they put a like on their website, they'll have an offer. Hey, I've got an offer at 123 Main Street, Royal Oak, and we're going to pay $200 for this appraisal, even though they're collecting $500 or $450. Okay.
Sure.
And nobody wants to do it for $200. So then the next, hour later, they go to $250 and nobody comes in yet.
Is that how it is? Is it
like, yes.
That I personally don't know. I don't know.
That's how it's done.
It may be. It's probably just like the same way Equator back in the day gives a task or assigns agents, like who's the first to say we'll do it.
Well, this is not the first. They do it on a bidding system. So they start at a low price. They try to get somebody to do it for a low price. You can always find somebody that's slow and maybe they'll say, you know what? Yeah, I want to do it. I'll go do it. And then they go do it for $200. In the meantime, the appraisal management company gets $450. They make $250.
Yeah, I'm unaware of how that system works.
That's how it
but
works.
I do know that the appraisal management is getting a piece that the appraisers used to get.
Right.
And so you would have appraisers that are very good, would get a lot of business, and then one day their business just went.
Right. And then the appraisal management company has a person that they have on staff that they call a reviewer, mm-hmm. and they basically review it. So they're basically the pimp. And you're, as the appraiser, you're the whore.
In some respects.
I know it's a bad way to say it.
In some respects, it was.
Is that a bad way to say it?
Yeah, okay. It is. But it's true.
It's true.
But in some respects, the issue is they wanted non-bias appraisals. Well, this is a part that's always troublesome to me. The appraiser gets all the purchase contracts.
Yes.
And so a part of me is always thinking it should really be kind of like refinance appraisals where they're given nothing.
Right.
And you go in unbiased. And that would be the best way to do it because they're thinking, well, the appraisal management companies keep it unbiased because you can't, like, the lender can't pick one. Well, the appraisers aren't supposed to be biased if they're doing it right anyways. So it's a very tough area of concern in the lending industry. there's pros and cons to it all. All I know is that when anybody is asked to do the same work and get paid less than they used to,
they're not going
to
do as good of a job.
It's common sense.
And then to top it off, the appraisers are under such scrutiny by the federal government. Oh, you overappraised it. We're going to come after you. Not only are we going to take your license, we're going to put you in jail.
Well,
there was a lot of appraisal fraud.
Well, there is some new legislation that is put out. I don't know if it was passed, but there is now they have a time limit on that sort of thing. It can't hang out there forever, and that was something the appraisers were very concerned about. So that is something that I'm not sure if it was Michigan Association of Realtors or on the federal level, but that is something that has changed.
I mean, at the end of the day, I think what we're all agreeing upon is that there's just the term human error. There's an element of human error in all the appraisals, right?
It's human.
There is no scientific.
And that's why,
it's not error. It's opinion.
And because it's opinion. And
usually
this is
there's error when humans are involved.
Let's get into contracts. Let's get into what a lot of realtors even miss. And this is something I do for my own clients. A lot of the real estate contracts out there, if you look at the small language, and this is something you as a seller, especially all investors, sellers have to be aware of. When you buy this property, deep in the language of most of these real estate contracts, not ours at REMAX, but a lot of many other ones I can't say all REMAX, our company at REMAX.
Our company, yeah.
So it says this little line, if the property should appraise for less than the purchase price, the buyer can declare the offer of the contract null and void. That is a kiss of death language that a lot of people get confused on as sellers. They think, well, it has to appraise, right, to get financing. Well, that's two different, very different distinctive things. And I actually have arguments with realtors when I come to this and say, we are crossing that out. My seller's not going to agree to that. But here's the addendum we are adding to this transaction. And what it does, it doesn't put the buyer in the driver's seat of that. Because if the appraisal came in for $100 less, that clause gives the buyer the ability to say bye-bye. And why would they do that, you're thinking? Well, let's say they have cold feet or they just find another nicer property. You as a seller want at least to have the option to say—
to accept the appraised value.
Yes or no. Well, that clause, which is in many, many, many contracts, gives you no recourse. I'm a professional. I have seen every contract, and I got bit in the butt on this about a year or two ago, and I said never again. It showed up. I never saw it there before. So here's the addendum. The addendum says that the seller shall have the first right of refusal to sell at a renegotiated sales price and or the appraised value determined by the lender.
And you before, have to use that as a, on your addendum.
Before the buyer has the right to go bye-bye. And so if you as the seller in this addendum agree to say, okay, let's say the purchase price was $200 and you agree, I'll take $197. If you agree, this addendum says the buyer now has to move forward at the lower price.
Sure.
If you find a buyer that's not willing to agree to that language up front, then you got a buyer that's looking for a way out anyways.
Yeah.
Because right. There's no buyer in the world to say, well, that sounds good. If I get it for a lesser price than what I've agreed to now, that's great. So it gives you the driver's seat. Now, if you can't come to terms and you're unwilling to take that lower price, then here's what has to happen. The buyer can't just say bye-bye. The buyer has to get denied for mortgage because of a loan-to-value deficiency. If a buyer's putting 40% down and it appraises for a few thousand dollars less, the lender's still going to lend because
Correct.
The loan-to-value is there.
Correct.
It's only when you're in the situations of the low down payment where the loan-to-value becomes an issue for lending, and that's where the appraisal is very paramount. But if you got a buyer at 25, 30, 40% and you have a lower appraisal, just don't think that automatically, oh, I've got to renegotiate. They have to prove they can't get the financing. And if you go back to years ago when I first started 29 years ago, Standard Federal, many of these other banks that were around town, if they had a longtime standing client, it's the lender that determines if they're going to do the commitment for mortgage. And if it comes in low as an appraisal, many times they had clients, they said, yeah, but we know this client. We know they've got good credit. We know them. They bank with us. We're going to lend to them regardless.
Now those days are gone.
They're gone, yeah. But technically, especially if you've got people who are getting portfolio loans, it's up to the lender eventually to deny that mortgage.
Yeah, with a portfolio loan, that would be similar.
So the theory that always that we have to sell at appraised value, must appraise, man, don't always think that. There's more to this.
But if the buyer has no money to really bring to the table
and
the realtors don't want to work, I mean, it's you're stuck. I mean, both my deals pretty much shot a gun to my head. You either want to take the appraised value or not, or go back on the market.
Yeah.
which is never fun, and have to go through more offers and another inspection and another appraisal. And
understood.
Stretch us out 30, 45
understood,
days.
Understood, but let's be very careful up front. Before we sign that deal, let's look at the languages that's in there, and let's not have the buyer have the driver's seat on saying, I can just leave this because of any reason for a dollar under the appraisal.
Well, that's where I think Tony said in the lead-in is that having a super experienced – I mean, you have a first-time agent or a first-year agent.
They're not going to know.
They're not even going to. No, I mean, I got to explain the PA to them.
They might know, but it's rare.
To them.
It's rare.
Right.
But those little things can really save you. If I'm an investor and I need to turn this deal because I got one coming down the pipe with a huge profit margin, you saving me by getting this deal done because of that language and that one addendum is huge, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's worth its weight in gold if I can turn that money and go make another $50,000 or $60,000.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kev. So now we'll change the questioning to you.
Yeah.
Knowing that situation, here you are, a seasoned investor, flipped over 100 homes. Why aren't you your own realtor?
I don't want to be a realtor.
because I'm a representative of the Association of Realtors, Realtors, two syllables.
Tor.
Realtors.
Not realtor.
Yeah, realtor. It's like chalk on the...
Yeah, don't say realtor.
Yeah, realtors. I just have to get that out.
Get it out.
At least somebody pronouncing your name wrong. It's like, you just got to stop. It's like, hold on.
No!
Let me just get my name right.
So honestly, I try it myself. It's impossible to do everything.
Correct.
And here's what the biggest thing that realtors bring to the table is exposure, especially in Southeast Michigan. The difference is if you hire a seasoned realtor on the selling end, especially with the way we are all connected to each other,
correct,
and to the public and the way the internet works, our systems literally within a day, I think it takes about a day, maybe two, when we put a property on the market, between what's called a Great Lakes repository, which is a system through one of the MLS systems. It reaches all the other MLS, many of the MLS systems in Michigan. And then through another MLS system, it reaches a vast majority of the realtors in Southeast Michigan. You're talking anywhere between 50 and 35,000 realtors in Michigan having access to that property within a day of it going on the market.
Correct.
All having buyers, all being incentivized to sell that property. And then beyond that, we are connected to all the portals in real estate. So the demand, so when you have people looking at a product, the demand it creates. Look at eBay, for example. You know, you put something, I don't know what it is, you put a watch, you're selling a watch, you put this in your local little Macomb Daily or Oakland Press newspaper, you put an ad out there, but if you put it on eBay, it reaches the world. Where are you going to get more money?
Yeah. The world.
It's more eyes on it.
More eyes on it.
Bigger chance, bigger probability.
And that's the number one thing realtors do on the retail seller end. I have one office that I'm co-owner of in Royal Oak. Little plug for myself. any agents out there, I'm now the co-owner.
There you go. Recruiting session. Go ahead.
We will help give you this knowledge. At our company, honestly, we have knowledge from a lot of major players. So that's one thing any new agent would get from us.
Don't we have, as Remax First, I think five of our top agents, me and you being included in those five, are like in the top 10 in the whole Tri-County area.
If it's not based on production, I can say, and I am biased when I say this, we have some of the best brains in the business.
We really do. Well, what do you think we brought you on here? You've always been my mentor. We've only been doing this 1 year different, but your experience level is far surpasses mine. I mean, I've done a lot in my day, not to poke my own horn, but over 7,000 transactions.
Well, I'm just the nerd. You're the cool guy. I want to be you, and you want to be me.
I want to be you.
That's subjective. Yeah. Maybe we could just mix you two together.
And we are mixed. We're at the same company. And yes. Tony and I will bump things off each other. And that's the beauty. We have an inside system, you know, our own groups. We can ask a question inside our company, and within a minute or two, you get answers.
Yeah, we have a private Facebook website just for our company. So we're able to
bounce ideas, questions, advice, opinions.
Yeah, you know, it's really weird. We did a broker open this morning, and majority of people that do broker opens, they do it to bring real estate brokers to an area for lunch, and they'll have, you know, Jimmy John's sandwiches. Come on over, have a bite to eat, walk through the house, give us your opinion, because then this way, if they have a seller that doesn't understand his price is too high, the broker open usually brings a bunch of brokers to the table. They give them a free, you know, a free sub, and all of a sudden, yeah, you're a little bit too high. No, it's perfect or whatever.
Fix this, stage this, whatever.
We don't really need that. We have our own people.
Yeah.
That, you know, when you have a company that's got 150 people.
Plus.
Now, people have to realize our 150 agents is actually small for some other names that we don't want to talk about. Initials. Okay.
That's fine. Leave it at that.
Put it this way.
Leave it at that.
We have an office that's got 20 people in it, and a couple doors down or a quarter mile away, there's another office that's got 300 agents in it. Our buildings are the same size. How do they put 300 people in a 4,500 square foot building, and we have 28 people, and we're cramped, and they fit them all? No, it's because their people don't work. Their top agents couldn't make our top 20.
Right.
Okay. So now take that into effect. Take the years of it, the years of experience that we have. And like you said, we have a lot of players at RE/MAX First, plain and simple. We have a lot of players at RE/MAX First. Everybody has their own specialty. Everybody can bounce something off of our private little sector. We can bounce ideas off of. We can get, hey, we could throw a dozen brokers through instead of having a broker open, bring a dozen brokers through, throw some ideas at you. And, you know, and we've done the same thing for you, Kevin. So that's why I
do 80-90% of my deals with RE/MAX First agents. I mean, just, you know, by default, I mean, between you and Al and I'll name some, we have Paul Fujimoto and Liz Nicosia. Who else?
Brian Gabbert.
Brian Gabbert and Brandy Gabbert. I mean, there's some great minds, some great people. I mean, your brokers.
And so my 29-year career, 27 of those years have been at RE/MAX First. And I tell people, I get, you know, headhunted all the time. I tell people, and this usually stops the headhunting, they're going to take me out in a box.
Yeah.
That's when I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
And so that's a testament for other people in the industry to see that's what's so special about this company. Well, people tend not to leave. And if they do, they're not seeing the value.
No.
But many of our players, we call them players. They're players because they work hard.
They work hard.
Like a real player, a professional NFL, whatever.
Right.
So we are those kind of players. And again, 27 years, a box.
I don't see it a lot with RE/MAX First agents or RE/MAX in general, but why are all these other brokerages, why are these realtors always jumping? Things are going good. The economy is going good. Well, they're having some of their best years, and they're jumping. And all new signage and cards and name. And like, why would you want to like rock
the grass is always greener.
Yeah.
And you know what? And that's typical. But, you know, the one thing that is sort of different about our company is, especially when I first started there, it was like where you wanted to be like when you grow up. You typically don't start at RE/MAX, but when,
correct, you don't.
When I was chosen, I was not like, oh, I want to come to you, which that's how it is sort of today. I was chosen. It was like, they had to vote me in.
Really?
And it was close. I almost didn't make it. And you had to pay an initiation fee to get hired.
Wow.
I was so like, oh my gosh, I'm now at RE/MAX East at the time.
Right.
RE/MAX and I'm East, like, yeah. I'm privileged. You know why? Because I was rubbing elbows with some of the best people in the business. And that's why I am where I am today. Guys that are still in the business today, some are retired, some of them have passed on. But these people, they made me who I am today.
I truly believe that. Well,
there's got to be huge value from being able to look across the office and see a guy with 25 years of experience as opposed to look across the office and see a guy that just got out of real estate
and some
school.
Company is based on personality. Not, you know, there's some great companies. I'm president-elect of the Association of Realtors.
Correct.
So I see people from all over companies. Of course, I'm biased on my own. I'm a co-owner. But I do know there are many companies that have their niche. And I rub elbows with some of the finest realtors in the industry.
Sure.
And they're very good. And so everybody has their different niche, and their companies are excellent too. But then, you know, we work with a lot of the people. At any company, you're going to have people that have issues. But there are other great companies who are excellent, and they have their niche. And that's why people jump, because you know what? Maybe they don't want to sort of be the independent, my own business RE/MAX guy. They want to have a big brand that does luxury or is known around the world for luxury, and that's their niche. You know?
Gotcha.
So it just really depends.
I think it depends, like you said, on the individual realtor,
yep.
right?
Yep.
I mean, just what they projecting.
And
the
some,
next
if they're not making
years.
Money, some that are not making money, they're thinking
it's not
that
them.
It's not them. It's the company.
It's broker.
And you'll
they're
see them every
leads,
year or two.
Bringing,
every year or two.
Jumping around. There's no support. I'm not getting support. I'm not getting leads. I know I'm a great realtor, so it's time to. I'm going there.
Right.
You know, they get sold. They get sold a nice little package from.
So let's go back.
Yeah, let's circle back. We have a habit of. We have a habit of
benefit of the realtor. If I can talk about the on the buy end, so we get approached all the time by investors to help them buy something.
Right.
That's very, very tough for realtors. I'm going to be honest, because you know what's the investor always wants the best deal, and we have pretty much access to a lot of stuff that's retail.
Sure.
So you need that wholesale, that person that is down on their luck, or they're losing it through foreclosure, taxes are a problem, bankruptcy, all these different things that some realtors have their ears to the ground too, and some don't. But the biggest number one thing that I tell realtors is they have to be careful when they take out an investor, and they have to be careful to say and be honest. And the honest thing is, if you came to me and said, Al, I want you to help me find my first flip or first deal.
Oh, my gosh.
Deal.
I know you guys probably get that all the time.
All the time. And so here's the thing.
Investors.
Here's the number one thing.
Oh, my
so,
gosh.
So if we're going to try to help you find the lowest price property or something that you can do well with, or many times I tell people, don't go for the flip. Go for the long buck, especially in the market we're in.
Correct.
You buy it, hold it, make rental, and then sell it someday down the road. So what is my incentive? So let's say it's a $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 property, whether it's in Detroit or Warren, and you want that deal. Well, you got to imagine that realtor can't spend an inordinate amount of time it takes to really advise you and counsel you and teach you everything and help you through that process when the commission on that property might be $800,000, $1,200. They're not going to spend their life on it. So let's think about money. A smart realtor will say honestly to you, I will help you, but I need a fee beyond what is just in the MLS paid by the seller. And I've done that with certain clients, and they have paid dearly, but they get me. And the ones that say they don't, no, I'm not going to do that.
They don't deserve you.
They don't get me.
No.
And they might get someone else, and that's fine. It's just that if you really know your stuff, an investor is smart to pay someone, and especially some might even ask for a retainer, but pay someone that has the knowledge, and because you have knowledge, Tony.
Yeah.
And so like I couldn't come to you and say, hey, help me, and I want you to find me a $20,000 property. You may do it, you may not. But
it goes back to the appraiser thing.
Yeah.
If I'm not getting paid that much,
right.
And I will say the one thing about Kevin is Kevin has loyalty. Mm-hmm. Kevin's word is his bond, and I don't need a contract with him. If you buy from him, he's going to let you list. And so you're not only making on the buy side, but you're making on the list side. And then you could also resell it. He never squanders about you making money. He wants you to make money because he's making money, and he knows without you, he's not going to make money.
And that circles back to your question a half hour ago.
Why do you use a realtor?
Why I don't want to be a realtor, right? Mm-hmm. If you bring me a property as an investor and I rehab it and it's a $60,000 property and you made, $1,800, $1,700 on the front side, and I say, thanks, I renovated it, turned it into a $200,000 property, and I list it, and I'm going to make another $6,000 commission. You're never going to bring me another property again.
Never.
We're friends, but let's face it.
Right.
You got other investors you can work with. It's
absolutely.
Just that we work really well together, and you know the way I do my houses.
And let's talk about that. You mentioned contract. So a lot of investors aren't like you. You're astute. You understand you probably would have no problem signing a buyer agent, whatever it is. But many new investors out there, don't be afraid. There are laws we have. And laws, technically, one, I have to disclose to you how I'm going to work with you from day one. Technically, state law says I got to whip out that agency disclosure the first time I meet you and have you sign it. Before we do anything and give you advice. And then we're supposed to, in order to have that, we're supposed to have a signed buyer agency agreement. And there's other forms. The investors out there need to realize if you're going to hire professionals, just like hiring an attorney, they're not going to take you on unless you don't sign a retainer agreement. In our industry, legally, many agents don't have you sign anything, but legally to represent you, you have to sign those forms, and you have to, the agent is smart to comply with state law. And if that agent is complying and doing that and is really adamant,
you will always get paid.
Not only get paid, but they're going to be the same way with you all through the transaction. They're going to make sure the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, and everything's legal, and you're protected as their client.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Marge Fraser, who was...
God bless her soul.
God bless her. God rest her soul. Marge Fraser was our teacher. She was our real estate guru. She might not have been a great realtor, but boy, she was a hell of a teacher. She used to always make me sit in front of the class because I always disturbed everybody. She was great. And Marge said to me one time, and I think she probably said it to everybody, your daughter's having a sweet 16 party. You go to the five best bakers in town and you say, You guys make me a cake. Whoever makes me the best cake, I'll buy from them. Who's going to make you the cake?
Nobody.
That's right.
I don't know. I just guessed.
They want nobody because nobody's going to make you the cake.
I was always good at guessing in school.
Without a deposit. Without a deposit,
without a commitment, without a contract, because they're not going to make you a cake and not get paid for it. Mm-hmm. And it's the same way. You wouldn't ask somebody to go to work and say, if I like what you do, when you're done, I'll pay you at the end of the day. If I don't like it, I'm not going to pay you.
What do you guys think about that? Because, again, I'm not a realtor of when somebody has a house and it's like, you know, hey.
Realtor.
Real tour. Yeah. I got to get that down.
Tour.
I was going to punch you in the face in a minute. They've got, you know, $100,000 house, and they want to interview 3 to 5 agents to get that listing. How do you guys handle that in this market?
Well, you know, honestly, I'm not afraid. If they want to interview many people, God bless them, and that's fine by me. And you know, I really think some people need to. If they don't have someone they truly feel they can trust in their corner, then yes, interview and find out who you think is going to be the best one to represent you. Do not, especially if you're a seller. Don't hire a realtor because they said your house is worth the most. A realtor does not set the price and make the market. The market makes the market. There's no one person that's going to sell your house necessarily for more money or substantially more than another, because the market determines that. What a real good realtor may end up getting you more money is when you're in transaction, they have to negotiate the price. They can maybe help negotiate a better price. Or if there's an appraisal problem, they can work on that. Or if there's a contract problem, they know what to do. So in the end, yes, maybe a better realtor can get you a better net dollar. But don't go because, oh, this realtor says my house is worth $20,000 more. That's my guy or gal.
We lose a lot of deals because
it's called
that.
Buying a listing.
Yeah.
And so hire the realtor based on experience or who you think you trust and have a good rapport with. If you're not have a good rapport with the person you hire, and you're just getting a feeling that your personalities even clash, don't go there because you're going to be living with that person for months.
Right. Okay, and then my other question for you guys is, because this just came up with another buddy of mine and we were debating about it, is the point of diminishing return of working with a buyer and you've showed them 10, 15, 20 houses. Nobody wants to walk away
or more.
Nobody wants to walk away from a commission.
I've done it.
And you never know if that 100, and I'm talking like on like an $80,000 house, right? And you probably spend enough gas money to even cover your.
Well, that's a buyer agency contract, and it works two ways. But however, you know, that's the commitment that you make a commitment to hire this realtor. The realtor needs to make the same commitment back to you.
But at what point if they're wasting your time? Well, they're almost like they're not even serious, but they keep calling me to go show these houses. They're nice people.
Well, you might have to have a talk. And I've, you know, it's very rare this happens. It happened to me this year, honestly. And it was basically we had, you know, I don't, whatever your religious preference is, I call it a come to Jesus meeting. Yeah. And it's basically
from a Jewish guy. I come to Jesus.
Half Jewish.
Jesus was a Jew, though.
Yes, so, he was.
Yes, he was a
and
Jew.
So basically, you say, "Hey, look, I can't help you get what you want. It doesn't exist, perhaps, and maybe you need to wait until you have more money or the market's different. I just can't help you, and just don't be drudging along and thinking all these things in the back of your head. If you need to cut the cord, tell your client.
So there is a time.
There's a time. And I had to do it. Reluctantly, I had to do it, and I don't. And maybe they purchased a home. That's fine. It was a referred client, and I just can't help them.
Some people are looking for the Holy Grail.
Well, they come to. Well, the reason I cut it is because they breached contract. They wanted a home in Macomb or Oakland County, and then they're starting to look in Lapeer and Santa Lac and way out there. And it's like, you know, we can't do that because of the time and effort and the price range. Sure. I can't have me drive, you know, an hour, hour and a half to show a property. It doesn't.
Right.
And I don't know the area as well.
Right.
Yeah.
That was good answer.
He's like I said, I told you he's a plethora of knowledge when I wanted him on.
Yeah.
He knows what he's talking about. And sometimes the hardest thing for us to do as realtors, we have so much invested into somebody, is firing a client. But I think my biggest thing is, like you said, I don't mind the interview process. They think they're interviewing me. I'm interviewing them. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
And I do a buyer counseling session with every buyer. I sit them down and I take them, you know, especially retail clients, people just going to live in their home, like not an investor. But I basically will say from the time we talk today to the time we're going to go through this whole flow chart, and we cover everything from the now moment to turning the key and moving in and every detail in between. So when all these things come up in transaction, they are not scared or what's that? Why is that? Because we've already talked about it. I've informed them. And I spend a good hour plus on that minimum. But I learned years ago, if I don't inform the client what the transaction's like, they won't know. Even an investor. Investors sometimes don't even know what they don't know. And so, you know, you keep talking about the benefits of realtor.
Well, Kevin's learning stuff every day.
Well, you learn everything. I mean, every house, you learn something, right?
And so that's something investors need to know. There is a distinctive difference. A realtor is not necessarily a real estate agent. There's a distinctive difference. So if you hire a real estate agent, they cannot call themselves realtor unless they're a member of the Association of Realtors and abide by the code of ethics of the National Association of Realtors. Mm. There is a strict code of ethics. There's a complaint system. There's a system by where that agent, if they don't comply, the public and or other realtors can make a complaint and seek justice, so to speak.
What percentage of real estate agents are a realtor?
Well, I believe it. I don't know for sure, but I believe it's about 70%.
Okay.
Well, because commercial people,
there's a lot of commercial that are not members, but there is commercial boards of realtors that are. So there's I believe approximately 1.2 million realtors in the United States, and wow. I believe there's about 2 million total practitioners of real estate. Real estate agents. Wow. So we're all real estate agents or brokers, but we're not all realtors.
The majority of residential people, I would say, are realtors.
How much time do we got left, Jess?
Probably about 10 minutes. Okay.
One question I got for you guys is the I guess I'm interviewing both of you guys today.
Well,
to be able to sit down with 50 years of experience, you know, I have all these questions because I'm not an agent, but I do so much business and I'm in the real estate game.
People laugh. Just excuse that one because people are saying, you know, you guys do like you interrupt each other all the time. And I'm like, well, that's because we're having a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, we interrupt each other because something comes to mind. It's hard to throw the track off. So I like the fact that you're asking us questions now. Yeah. It's just it's not a different
one of my biggest things that I ask you guys is the barrier to entry in any career affects everybody in that line of work, right? You know, for me at the PD, I got to go through a rigorous testing, a 6-month academy. You really can't work. I mean, it's hard. I mean, all the testing to be able to do that job. I feel like the barrier to entry to become a realtor.
Amen.
is low.
Yeah.
And I think
let's speak on that.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm not a police officer. A lot of respect for police officers. And the difference is what you do for a living, if you don't do it right, people can die.
Or you can die.
You can die or the public can die. You're here to protect and serve.
Sure.
So there's life and death in what you do. I've never heard of anybody dying in a real estate transaction. I guess it could happen.
Get a couple people angry at each other. Yeah. You never know. Someone's postal.
Probably happened. Well,
I guess that's part of it. There's no violent crimes involved. What we do, in a sense, it's all civil paperwork type things. And the barrier, yes, I wish it was higher. But, you know, here's what happens. Any industry, whether it's what you do for a living or real estate, you know, even the top doctors, the cream rises to the top. And you will see in our industry, probably the 10%, top 10% are the ones who are doing the business. And the public sees that. The public is smart enough to know. They can compare apples to apples. And very quickly over time, they can judge who they think is very good. And the industry kind of washes itself.
Sure.
There's that turnover. Your business, because of the barrier, your career, because of the barrier of entry, the academy basically does that right up front.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I see a lot of these young agents that, I mean, literally, you guys have
400 bucks, 40 hours of school, and I'm an agent. It doesn't mean you know what you're doing.
You know, I list one of my properties, we get an offer, and it's just a cluster because I've got a experienced agent, reputable agent, and we're dealing with some kid that, I mean, can't even fill out the purse
agreement
properly.
Right. And we were all new ones.
You're all new ones.
And you know what? We've been there. But let me tell you, the difference is I deal with a lot of these people on the other side. So my job as a listing agent, I protect my clients from, I call myself a professional babysitter. So I professionally babysit the transaction and keep those other newbies, so to speak, or even people who've experienced who don't have the knowledge, and I protect them in the transaction. But I see so much malpractice, so to speak. Things are filled out wrong. They don't know what they're doing. But the thing is, there are good new people. And don't be afraid to hire a new agent if they have someone with them helping them. These companies have a support system that so before I even get their offer or contract, you know, I see a lot of new agents. I'm like, oh, I'm pressed. Everything's filled out great. I'm sure they had someone in the office, a broker, a manager.
They took the time to get mentored.
And, so some of these new people have some great people behind them. And if they do, and a buyer or seller knows that, yes, a new person could be just as good, maybe even better.
Yeah,
because they have the time.
I've had new agents bring me deals. I have nothing against them. I mean, like you said, I mean, I was a rookie police officer. I mean, I didn't know shit, you know. And now you learn as the job goes on.
People had your back.
Correct. I had to ride next to a guy. So not only after a 6-month academy, but then the first 4 months, I'm being babysat by a guy next to me, watching my every move, responsible for me and my actions. And so I just feel like it'd be so much more beneficial in the industry if there was just a little more scrutiny, a little more rigorous training, mm-hmm. and some type of training program.
There's been lots of talk about that. I think it's coming. Some states are going where everybody's a broker. So there's some different ideas on that. So that's out there. I think you're going to see that more as time goes on.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I know the requirements for education are getting higher and higher and higher.
I think you need to really, really know more to do this business properly. And I think our society is much more astute, and people's expectations of things are different perhaps of 30, 40 years ago. I think people can find out so much more knowledge on their own that, you know, it's like the public knows the difference between good and bad because they can Google it.
Yeah, I talked with a guy this morning that was referred to me by someone's husband whose wife is a realtor, but they referred him to me. And he's like, I'm going to look at this house with the agent. You know, what can you tell me about it? I said, I can't tell you anything right now, but go look at the house and I can tell you exactly what you're going to find because he explained to me what it was. And he called me this morning. He goes, boy, you were right. He goes, I opened the window. The window fell down without anything. It was like perfume on the pig. And it's like.
One more question for you guys. Yeah, and I think we got to wrap it up.
Yeah.
I got all these in my head.
Yeah.
You meet with the hot as the market is, right? And these houses selling quickly. So I think a lot of sellers, whether it's investors, owner occupants, they have their house. They know it's probably going to sell pretty quick if it's priced right. So now they think they can name their commission. And they meet with you and say, mm-hmm. I want you to list my house, but we are paying 4% commission.
I got this. I got a text because somehow I'm on some list now because I'm co-owner of the Royal Oak office.
Yeah.
I got a text from some person who I looked it up. They are an owner. They are trying for sale by owner. They bought the house in February. They apparently flipped it. I don't know who they are. I looked it up and they texted me and they said, we'll pay if you have a buyer, we'll pay you like whatever. And so I asked them for their email and I'm going to email them my credentials and I want them to know that they don't understand A, how much money we can get them perhaps on retail, but they wanted to like name the commission.
Right.
So their house is going to be hiding whatever house they have. And they already told me the price. I looked at it like it's crazy, but that house is hiding out there. It may be out there in some stuff, but a lot of realtors aren't going to know about it. They're maybe texting half a dozen. So they now want me to sell that home and bring a buyer to it when it's probably overpriced, but even if it's not, I'm going to now get involved with them, basically have to do both sides of the transaction because, you know, who's doing their side.
Right.
Where I could sell Tony's listing or someone else who has a property listed in Royal Oak, and then I'm dealing with a professional that understands my offer, knows me perhaps. I have a rapport with them from past transactions because a lot of times we know a realtor. Like if I did sold one of Tony's listings, he would tell the seller, you can trust Dale. It's going to close. Val knows
that's true.
You can trust Al. Yeah. That's going to close. He knows what he's doing. And so and that owner, you know, putting that out there, what are they getting out of it? You know, so what are you saving money? This is a $350,000 house.
They don't. They think they're saving money.
No.
And they're tripping over dollars to save nickels.
And so here's the thing. I'm representing a buyer and I know that that's a for sale by owner and they're trying to save money. The first thing I would tell my buyer is, whatever they think they're saving, we're taking that off the top on an offer.
Right.
Why not? They're not paying me.
But what if they came to you and maybe I misunderstood. If they say,
oh, when they want to sell.
We want you to list this house, but we're only offering a 4% commission, however you want to split that up.
Well, here's the thing. A disclaimer.
Yeah.
Every real estate broker can charge anything they want.
That's
this is America. And any seller has the right to agree to what they want to pay.
There's no cap.
There's no fixed.
There's not an 8%.
No.
There's no,
no.
Cap.
No, there's no. You know what? There may be some laws of averages where it ends up at a certain place, but it's not something that it is negotiable, and it is something that, you know, you could try to negotiate. But think of it this way. You're a seller. The test actually for you is to see which realtors agree to it quickly. Because if you get a realtor, if you say, okay, I want you to list my house and do it for 4%, and the realtor says, okay.
Done.
How quick did they lose their own money? Right. How quick are they going to want to lose yours?
Right.
Okay. If I can't negotiate a couple or whatever percent I want for me, they have no business negotiating hundreds of thousands of dollars for you.
Correct.
And so another thing they think also is that we split that. So most times in order to really incentivize the realtor's community, the realtor has to put out their 2 or 3% or whatever they do.
Yeah.
And then those realtors are going to show that house. Well, if you have a 4% and it's split equally, but there's other listings that the realtor can make 3% by showing those, they may choose to show the ones at 2% last. Not saying they will, but they might. It's human nature.
It's human nature.
And so as an owner, you know, you don't pay anything until you close and get your money.
Right.
So the time to negotiate the commission is not necessarily when you list the property. Because it's not sold yet.
Right.
It's really when you get an offer and it's like maybe the dollars aren't making sense. Right. That's the time the seller might have leverage.
Right. You have an experience.
Not at the listing because nothing's being sold. Right. You haven't paid nothing yet.
Nothing.
Unless you have a broker that does get money up front, and that could be happening. But for the most part, they don't.
Right. Where do you see this market going? Last thing, right? We got to wrap up, Jess.
Ooh.
Where's this market going? Because the train of thought everybody says is we're due for another bust. You know, we're going to take a
– First of all, Michigan, but, mm-hmm. we never really had a bust except for the last one.
It was always steady,
up.
I mean, I'm seeing prices back. I own multiple properties, like rental properties in East Point. I can't believe where those values have gone back up to. And now my question is, how much higher are they going to go over the next 2-3 years? Or are we due for a pullback? I mean, I just want to get your opinion because you've been in the market so long.
I think there's certain areas that could be hitting a bubble at some point. I mean, the hot ones. And this is purely my opinion, speaking of myself. Midtown, perhaps areas of Ferndale, Royal Oak, these prices are so high that – okay, will they sustain themselves? Let's think of it about this way. Many of these resurgent areas that have all these young people that have moved in, they have very cool areas. I mean, you got a great culture in these areas. You got nightlife. You've got just a great community there now that never was. So all these people are moving in. Let's think about life cycles. So you get all these people who move there in their 20s, 30s, no kids, good income, but then they decide, oh, we're going to have a family, this. So through those life cycles, I've seen it, like especially in new condo complexes, you'll see new condo complexes with certain type of style. Ranch condos attract older people. Let's say it's the multi-story ones.
Yeah.
Those new condos get sold by the builder to all these 20, 30-year-olds that are single or have young families. And then you see like in 5 to 10, maybe something 10 years usually, that cycle, like everybody's selling at the same time because everybody's getting married and or having kids at the same time. And we now need a garage and we have dogs, we need a fence, we need a yard, we need all these different things. Now we're thinking schools. So then that cycle happens. So I'm concerned a little bit about those certain areas that attracted all these young people. But if they all go through these life cycles around the same time and have to sell at the same time, will that sustain?
That's a lot of factors. Really, really good analogy. A
lot of factors
involved. I knew it, but I never put it into words. That is an amazing analogy.
Well, and that's why I was here today.
So it's time to plug, baby. It's time to pay the piper. Al, if any of our listeners would love to get a hold of you, how do we get a hold of you?
They can call me either at 586-489-8109 or 248-397-5256 or alblock.com.
Facebook?
Sure. Google me. Al Block, A-L. And Block, like H&R, but without all that money.
And you can get a hold of Kevin at?
586-855-4041. If you know of a neighbor, a friend, you have a rental property you want to just liquidate, you know, an unfortunate death in the family, and you guys just need cash and want to be done with it the next week, I can close you out quick. No headache, no appraisal, no inspection. Give me a call. And likewise, if anybody has a house they want to sell and put on the market, the market's super hot right now. Tony will get you top dollar, or Al can both list your house. Or if you have a house that you identify that you want to buy, you guys finally found your dream house, give either of these guys a call. But Tony's number is
586-773-4400 or find us at the Raffin Team on Facebook. Or if you've got any questions about the show, or you want us to talk about something that you like, look us up at Fix It and Flip It on Facebook. We
also check my Facebook page out, Cash, the number 4, Your House Now. And that'll give you a little bit about my cash buying business.
And share this podcast with your friends. We're on, what were we on?
Yeah, iTunes, YouTube.
iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud. Did I get them all?
Basically. Like, yeah. we're all the podcasting is. If you go to a podcast website, they're there.
We're all there.
Share this video. Invite your friends to like our page, Fix It and Flip It. And that's it for this week. We'll see you next week
Al,
with another guest.
Would you come back?
I'll come back.
Oh, we'd love
that. That went quick. I got a lot more questions for Al. So.
Thanks, Al.
Everybody have a good week.
You've been listening to Fix It and Flip It with Tony Raffin and Kevin McClellan. Be sure to stop by our Facebook page, like it, and follow. And come back again next week so you can arm yourselves with the tools and strategies to become a successful real estate entrepreneur. This is Fix It and Flip It.